Oakland is an extremely beautiful city. Geographically, it's just amazing. It has 5 miles of waterfront. It has a lake, beautiful hills, but a terrible reputation. I mean, most people only hear about our crime rate, and that's partly a reflection of the mainstream media. That, I mean, if you open a newspaper in just about any city, all you see is how many killings there were or how many car accidents. Or it just seems like a real lack of news about what really is going on in depth in our city. So that's one obstacle we face in Oakland, is that it has an extraordinary amount of assets and resources and wonderful people, and all people know about it is its crime rate. Comparing other things, we have a lot of artists. We have more artists or equivalent number of artists per capita to New York. Geographically, like I said, we have incredible assets on the waterfront, and we have an electorate that's very progressive, that has just paid for several bond measures to increase access to the waterfront, for example, and to improve the lake. So we have, even during these difficult financial times, we actually have some funds designated to deal with some of these issues in Oakland. Just like most other cities, we have potholes that we haven't fixed. We have a lot of other things that need attention. We have public schools that need to be improved. So I think that the uniqueness of Oakland is its incredible geography, its diverse population cross-culturally, and the opportunity to have a woman mayor.
That was Nancy Nadel, candidate for mayor of Oakland, in a conversation after a campaign house party on January 15th of 2006. For further information, she can be reached at www.nancynadelformayor.com. In the following recording by the LA Sound Posse, Nancy Nadel will describe some of her platform and visions for the city of Oakland.
My name is Mike Falk, and I've just held a little house party for the candidacy, the mayoral candidacy of Nancy Nadel. I live in East Oakland. She's a council member from West Oakland who's running for mayor. And I'm going to ask her a question that she's not expecting, is that I wrote letters to maybe 30 or 40 people on the block and dropped them on their doorstep a few days ago with an RSVP at the end of it to invite them to this house party, and nary a one showed. And these are all people who are serious citizens. So why do you think they didn't respond in any way or didn't show up this afternoon?
Well, it's hard to say. It could be anything from the fact that we've had rain for 2 weeks and now we have a sunny afternoon and they would rather do something out in the sun, or not being involved politically. I don't know them to know whether or not they go to meetings or not. But I think often those of us who are political junkies don't realize that most people do not get involved in politics, don't really get involved until a couple days before the election. And then they read some of the literature, and that's how they vote. So it could be that. It could be that they're supporting another candidate. Without knowing who they are, it's really hard to guess. But I think that often I'm noticing that a lot of people are just not involved until much closer to Election Day.
And then if I became the precinct captain, which I probably will for these few blocks, how do I get people to respond before these few days before election?
My experience in precinct walking and being a precinct captain, but certainly being the candidate, I do a lot of precinct walking and knocking on doors, and that kind of contact, that conversation rather than just leaving a piece of paper, really makes a difference. Nothing beats the candidate at the door, but certainly somebody at the door and talking to you about why you support a particular person for that race really makes a difference and gets them started thinking about it. I'm sure that the fact that you left literature on each porch makes people realize, oh yeah, now there's a mayor's race coming up. And it gives them the first signal. But the number of contacts that you make with them, the conversation, the issues that you raise with them to find out what it is that's most important, just as we did in the house party, and responding to them about how I will address those issues, I think is what has a more memorable effect, and hopefully will bring them to the polls. I mean, we don't even have everybody voting, let alone coming to a meeting. So, getting people not only excited, but then actually getting to the polls is another whole effort.
So in short, kind of one-to-one, face-to-face is the best method.
It's the best way to get people involved. And at their doors, expecting them to come somewhere else is not always very fruitful.
Well, let's go on to...
To why I'm doing it, right?
Why you're doing it and how you started doing it, maybe, is...
Sure. I've been in politics for 17 years. I first served on the Water District Board, which is fairly low profile if you're looking at the kinds of elected positions people can hold, but a very important one to provide water and sanitary services to about 1.2 million people in the East Bay. And I replaced a Republican millionaire incumbent who took the office for granted and certainly wasn't representing me. When I first found out his positions, I thought, my goodness, I could do a better job at this than he's doing, and prepared myself for the next 4 years to learn all about water policy, and then ran against him and won with a very low budget and a very large district. So I served on that board and changed it from being like an engineering firm to being a public entity that cared about the resources, that was really provided good stewardship of the resources. Focused a lot on making sure there was local hiring, that there were local contracting, that we cared about the environment of the source of our water, and just really broadened the concerns there. Got an environmental majority while I was on the board, and I really worked to get other environmental-minded folks filling the other seats, and became the first woman president of the East Bay Mud Board. Then, after my husband passed away, my husband was very active in the city side of politics, Chappelle Hayes, and he had run for city council unsuccessfully, and then he passed away, and I decided to run for city council, again beating an incumbent, and have served on the council ever since, with a focus on sustainable development, and that means economic prosperity, environmental enhancement, and social equity as the guiding principles behind everything that I did as a representative on the council. As mayor, I plan to focus on jobs and entrepreneur development. Our current mayor is focused a lot on housing, mostly market rate housing that's had a mixed effect. It certainly has raised the property values for property owners, but only 40% of the people in Oakland are property owners, and so 60% have not really benefited from this, and in fact some of them have been pushed out of the city because there hasn't been a balance of affordable housing as well. So as mayor, I hope to get better deals for Oaklanders from our developers to make sure that there's also an affordable component, that they build green buildings, that they do things, again, according to these sustainability principles. Making sure that we address education in a more holistic way. We have a lot of adults in our city who don't know how to read. 26% of our adults cannot read above fourth grade level. Many of them graduated from high school without learning how to read, and many of them are non-English speakers. And so really expanding on the capacity of teaching our adults how to read so they can compete in the job market is a very high priority for me.
You had mentioned also about parolees also needing these
kind of surface. Yeah, about 50% of our folks who are previously incarcerated have the same low reading level and really need to get those kinds of skills in order to reacclimate when they come out of an institution. And then also I'll be looking at what some of the other mayors in major cities are doing in terms of taking over the school districts, which requires legislation. It's not something you can just decide administratively, but I know that that's being considered in LA. It was done in Boston, and I can't remember, I think in New York they did it as well. So looking at whether that's a good solution for Oakland. But certainly getting Oakland out of debt and back in the democratic process is a high priority for me. We have a state administrator because we had to borrow a huge amount of money from the state in order to deal with the bankruptcy of the school district. And the state administrator has gotten them deeper in debt, and I haven't really seen improved academics either. We've seen a lot of juggling around, a lot of closing of schools and reopening and making teachers reapply for their jobs at lower salaries, but we haven't really seen any difference in the progression of improved academics that we had before he came. So there's definitely room for improvement there. And then also another priority, the third priority, is public safety, making sure we have a balance of violence prevention as well as enforcement, that we have good community policing, that people know who their beat officer is, and the beat officer treats them respectfully if they're obeying the law and deals with criminal activity appropriately. So that's my third priority.
Could you explain why it's so important for a city like Oakland to preserve and expand the employment in production, distribution, and repair elements, as opposed to just expanding retail sales that go along housing? Why is that so important for us?
Sure. The retail jobs are great. I mean, we certainly want people to buy in Oakland. The sales tax that comes to the city to deal with other services is generated from that. But the actual salaries of retail jobs are not very high. They're usually minimum wage. And if you look at what's needed to live in Oakland in an unsubsidized house, you have to make $18 an hour. And retail jobs, you're lucky if it's $6 an hour. So making sure that we have a range of jobs that provide higher salaries, I think, is also very important. And I've been instrumental in trying to preserve our industrial property so that we have the opportunity for businesses to grow and develop in Oakland and have not have it all flipped to housing. That's very important to be able to have people who can walk to work, for example, to have those kinds of jobs that we want, to have a range of revenue both for the city and for the people who live here. And then the whole issue of congested freeways and people having to drive long ways away from where they live. Right now we're focusing on having more people live more densely in the cities so that there isn't a lot of congestion on the road. But if you don't have places for them to work in that city, then they wind up getting on the freeways again and having to travel long distances to where industrial development will be able to afford to open some space. If we don't preserve some of that industrial land from speculation, where the property owner or the purchaser thinks that they're going to be able to build housing there and thinks that they're get a certain profit, and so they pay more for the land than an industrial developer could pay for it, and that then takes it out of the industrial market forever. We have to make sure we have a balanced city. And there's some really interesting businesses that are cropping up, too, some of them with our help and some of them entirely on their own, because we have a lot of creative people in Oakland. Some of the literature I've been reading lately about encouraging industrial and business development shows that it happens in a climate of a lot of artists in your city, a diverse population, culturally very interesting, which will attract people who are creative folks. And it takes a certain creativity and very high energy level to be an entrepreneur. I mean, it's a real multitasking effort, and we're seeing that that type of person really is attracted to a city that has this array of cultures and artists within their midst. So I think that we're poised well for attracting that kind of business, and we're seeing some develop. We're seeing a new company that makes tea. They package tea and sell it, and they just grew to 30 employees. We're seeing a new chocolatier trying to attract some high-end health food manufacturers to come to Oakland. So we're also seeing the multimedia business growing. We have some independent filmmakers, and we have the Wayans brothers interested in developing a film studio in Oakland as well that we hope will have a catalyzing effect to bring other businesses in. And the kinds of jobs that are created by the film industry are a wide range, not just the people who are in front and behind the camera, but those who make costumes, those who build sets, who do catering. So you can have a lot of different education levels working in that same industry.
You talked a bit about how to make the police force more effective.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we've come a ways from where we were before. We still have a long ways to go. Part of the problem, in my view, is that the leadership of our police force has not been good. Recently, we have a new chief who seems to have some who seems to be respected by the officers, but is also requiring more discipline than we had there before. We're also under a consent decree to make sure that we do a better job, and that is also making a big difference. There are certain timelines and targets of behavior that have to change, and having a discipline policy, having a whole bunch of new policies that we never had there are being established, and I think ultimately that will make a difference. We need to recruit differently as well. I think some cities require that their police officers have a college education. We do not. I would like to see that happen. I think we can start recruiting. We seem to have hit a wall on recruiting. We don't see a lot of people jumping to be police officers in Oakland. So in terms of people in Oakland itself or even a little bit out of the city. So I'm suggesting to the police force to start looking at some of the historically black colleges to look at places where we'll have folks who represent the diversity of the people who live in Oakland, and hopefully will then have more respect for the citizens as they do their work.
And community policing?
Community policing is a very important part of the strategy. We have that policy in place. It's been on paper for a while. It just hasn't been implemented. And as the strong mayor form of government will allow, I will make sure that does get implemented. We really need to have an officer with some consistency in each neighborhood, and there isn't a career track in community policing, and that's what I want to establish also, so that they stay in the same neighborhood. Part of the problem is our contract with the police, and that's being negotiated, the union contract. The current union contract allows them to apply for a new beat every year, every January, and so there's a lot of moving around all the time. And also, if you want to be a sergeant or if you want to go up the ranks, you're encouraged to do different beats. So we're sort of working against each other by having the policies that we have, both in the union contract as well as in the department, that encourages the officers to move from one neighbor to another. And I want them to really develop a relationship with the community and want to stay in that community.
Okay. I guess, lastly, however you'd like to address it, is the Ron Dellums question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was in a race until recently with another council member. We were the front runners and several others behind us. Then our congressman was encouraged to run and is now in the race, and the others have dropped away, so it's just three of us now in the race, and that's changed the dynamics of the campaign considerably. He's very popular and has a lot of name recognition. But it hasn't lived in Oakland for over 30 years, and I feel that I know the city really well. I know where the bodies are buried in the bureaucracy and how to really make specific changes. You only get 4 years. Bureaucracies move very slowly, and you have to hit the ground running when you're elected. And he's a bright man. He's taking Oakland 101, a civics class. You know, he's educating himself about what's going on, but I don't think that's comparable to having lived here for the past 25 years and really have strategies in place and you know, a platform that I've developed with my volunteers for over 100 volunteers for almost the last year. You know, we're ready to govern.
And as a woman, you're ready to govern.
Yeah, we haven't had a woman mayor in Oakland yet. We have had African-American mayors, and I think it's very important for girls in our city to recognize that they can do anything that the boys can do. And if they don't see those models, then that plants a seed of doubt, and I want to make sure that they don't have that doubt. So I was the first woman president of the East Bay Mud Board, and I was the first woman to get a graduate degree from the department that I went to at Berkeley, actually, in engineering, and first woman president of the Bay Area Geophysical Society. So I'm ready to be the first woman mayor and get that as a possible idea for other girls coming after me.
You have been listening to Nancy Nadel, candidate for mayor of Oakland, answering questions after a campaign house party on January 15th of 2006. For further information, she can be reached at www.nancynadelformayor.com. This program was produced by the LA Sound Posse. The LA Sound Posse records speeches and events dealing with social justice issues. We use the Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Share-alike 2.5 license to ensure the ongoing public availability of these recordings. We share them via the Internet, community radio, and CDs distributed through grassroots social justice groups, nonprofit organizations, committed individuals, and others. Our goal is to be a part of the creation of a broad-based, participatory, and democratic civic media in support of a truly democratic society. You can reach us on the web at www.lasoundposse.org. Contact us for copies of this program on CD. You can download it for free at radioforall.net That's www.radio4all.net. If you value what you heard in this program, please feel free to copy and distribute it to others who you think would benefit from hearing it, and thus becoming yourself a part of a decentralized, democratic, civic media.